From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
It takes a building, a structure that is in significant disrepair, is very ineffective and very inefficient for taxpayers. I won't comment on the aesthetics. People, you're entitled to your own opinions. We'll leave that for you to discuss. But from a pure financial point of view, this is a compelling opportunity for the people of the state. This building is ineffective for the people who work here, all of whom are eager to move somewhere else. It's noisy.
The monthly pension payment of $560 million is the largest consistent expenditure that we have throughout the year. And it is one of the few areas where we have some flexibility because it is not covered by a court order and the delay will not cause immediate hardship. We will still send out retirement checks, but we will have to tap the corpus of the retirement funds to do so.
That audio, that's State Comptroller Leslie Munger talking about the state being short a little bit of the money it owes to the pension funds again. And Governor Bruce Rauner talking about an effort to sell the James R. Thompson Center in Chicago. Again, we've heard that as well. We'll talk about those issues today on State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse, Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Is in studio with us our panel in Chicago today, Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio, and two reporters from WBEZ in Chicago, Becky Vivi and Lauren Chulgen. Lauren and Becky, I appreciate you both stopping by to be on the show today.
Thanks for having us.
Well, there's a building in downtown Chicago designed by a famous architect, and now we have the second governor who says, Amanda Venicky, that he wants to sell it, and then he thinks somebody might tear it down. In some of the audio that I heard, not that was included in the top of the show, he mentioned that it smells like food, which reminds me of your office or any office I've ever worked in, really.
You know, I have to say, I've spent some time myself covering events in the Thompson Center meetings and such, or working out of there, and there are some smells. Some of it is good and delicious. I don't mind the wafting up of cafeteria delights, but there are some other smells. I was just there the other day, for example, in the basement. There was a whole crew mopping up random wet spots from gosh knows what, because there's constantly leaks and drips. I have sources within state government who in their offices have had buckets because their ceilings, whenever it rains, just kind of fall in. So yes, there are. It has most certainly fallen into disrepair. The architect, Helmut Jahn, has weighed in and said that, yeah, that's because the state didn't put the money into the Thompson Center that it needed. It was kind of funny. I think a lot of people noticed. He said it was meant to serve as a symbol of transparency and openness in state government, which, number one, gives everybody a chuckle. And then I think further symbolism that, of course, this building is falling into disrepair. So that is why Governor Bruce Rauner says he wants to sell it, and he suspects that somebody will buy it and, as you said, Bill, knock it down. The architect hopes that that won't happen. And I think there are a lot of questions. He wants it done within a year. There's already been legislation introduced by the Republican leaders. They say they want this on the fast track. And yet, what's going to happen? For example, there's a major L stop that is a huge point of transit for a whole lot of Chicago residents. What's going to happen there? The governor maybe devalue it by knocking the building right as you're trying to sell it. Why would you? You're trying to sell your home. You wouldn't say, yeah, it's really cruddy. You hate this place. You want to build it up. So a lot of questions at this point.
Well, I think part of the reason is it's this mindset that when somebody goes on the North Shore and buys a $1 million mansion and knocks it down to put up a $4 million mega mansion, the idea being that the governor has no use for the building, but the land underneath it is what would attract someone to put up, say, another Trump Tower.
Well, that's what Mayor Emanuel would also reiterate, which is what he said this week, which is that we'll go from having a building that gives us no tax revenue to a building that will bring in lots of tax revenue. And, you know, he said he talked to the governor over the weekend about it, and it seemed like a good plan to him. And I think, but Amanda makes a good point. It's an easy sell for Mayor Emanuel because it's such a great spot with transportation access. However, what's really going to become of that if you knock the building down?
Right. I mean, it goes underneath. Right. So I was kind of trying to parse this out with somebody recently. And you build a skyscraper, you've got to dig deep to get in there and have the base of your monster building. How do you do that when you have a significant L station, which is part of why this is such an attractive property?
Right.
Not to say that it's undoable. We
haven't
have
heard
the answers.
Right.
And I think part of the difficulty in my mind with doing the fast track is that there are a lot of unanswered questions. There are several thousand state employees who work in that building. It's a convenient place for people in the downtown area, for example, to renew driver's licenses. The Secretary of State has a major facility there, and I believe it's the second busiest one in the state. Where are these people going to go? Where are the workers going to be relocated, and at what cost? Those are the kind of things that the process is designed to answer questions of that nature, and that's why you don't fast-track this stuff. And there's also a question in my mind, is this going to be declared surplus state property? And if so, isn't there a provision in the law that would allow other local governments to have first dibs at the surplus property? I mean, there's a lot
but who has money for this sort of property? I don't know. Entity, right?
And
I'm
seem to recall that there were plans when the Chicago Avenue Armory was torn down on the near north side and replaced by the Museum of, I believe it's the Museum of Modern Art or Contemporary Art. The original plan was to sell that to a developer and build, you know, another high rise. And it wound up, because of some court intervention and some legal precedents, it wound up being used for a museum instead. And I mean, I don't know the answer to the questions, but I do know that they are questions that were I a legislator, I would want those questions answered before I would vote on any legislation to put this on the fast track.
Now, a question for any of you. If I were governor, and I certainly won't be, I would not want to propose an idea that was last espoused, maybe differently, but was last pushed by a governor named Blagojevich.
And after you've had Speaker Madigan, granted this was many months ago, but say he does see some similarities. Madigan was careful in his wording, but between Rauner and Rod Blagojevich, and that is something that you hear from time to time in his insistence on his different way of going about things and on his poor relationship with the Democratic leaders, and particularly Speaker Madigan. So I you're right, Bill, and that did not fare well then when Rod Blagojevich raised this idea. Interestingly, then the Republicans were not for it. And of course, this time you have Rudonio and Durkin both fully behind Bruce Rauner. Granted, of course, it is different in terms of the market, the state's fiscal situation. The Thompson Center has gotten worse over those years. And further, the Rod plan had something to do with he wanted to basically lease it. And so it's not exactly there's a little bit of apples to oranges.
Yeah.
Here.
The final iteration of the Blagojevich plan was in essence to mortgage the building. And there was a ruling from Attorney General Lisa Madigan that when you take out a mortgage, it's the equivalent of borrowing money. And because of that, it would have required a 3/5 vote in the General Assembly to approve the legislation to allow this to go forward, and the legislation did not get 3/5 vote, and therefore she said that you can't do it, and that put an end to the plan. And this was early in, I think it was probably early in or midway through Blagojevich's first term.
Now, when I hear this and see the discussion about it, part of me just says, is this a distraction, just another thing to create a debate but take us away from some substantive issues? Not that it's not a substantive issue, but is it a distraction away from that budget that's missing?
think that, I mean, Bill, maybe, perhaps, and yet it seemed, even though the governor was careful with his wording and said beauty is in the eye of the beholder, I think that there is some true, I mean, this guy is a developer, he's a businessman, so if he thinks the state can make a buck, he says it makes fiscal sense, but even outside of that, so maybe a distraction, but Governor Bruce Rauner has not had a whole ton of wins in his tenure. If he gets this one, it does seem like something that he truly cares about and believes. And there are a whole lot of state employees that I think would not be upset because those offices, as I said, are not ideal. Becky?
I would jump in too, because I was actually, the timing when he held the press conference to talk about this was also the day that Barbara Bird Bennett was appearing in court. You know, a lot of the reporters, the newspapers and the TV stations were getting calls from his office saying, you got to send somebody, you got to send somebody, you got to be there. And, you know, I think that's a little odd. You know, we've got this huge corruption scandal happening in the school system that Mayor Emanuel runs. Mayor Emanuel's close friends with the governor. You know, I don't know if that was all planned, but it's just one of those interesting moments where you're thinking, oh, geez, here we've got a bunch of other news trying to happen in the middle of this federal corruption scandal.
I would point out, too, particularly in the Chicago area, that the Cubs are probably the biggest news story, and there's probably a lot more people paying attention to the Cubs than anything going on in state government.
Yeah. I mean aldermen look at are the talking Chicago more papers. About right. I mean, aldermen are even talking more about the Cubs than they are about the budget, and we're only 2 weeks away from a vote. So that's any inclination of how people are dealing with the news of the day. I mean,
well, you know. And Becky, we'll use that. You mentioned the Chicago school scandal. For those that aren't always on top of city news, kind of give us an update and a briefing of what has all transpired there.
Right. So this week, the former head of Chicago Public Schools pled guilty to one count of wire fraud. She was charged with multiple counts of mail and wire fraud involving this no bid contract that she had steered to a former employer. You know, it would have been the summer of 2013, right after we closed 50 public schools. This sort of happened quietly. We approved this no-bid contract to a company called Soups that trains school leaders. That was sort of what they were selling. And the agreement, these emails that came out in the indictment, basically the owners of those companies agreed with Bird Bennett over email that she would get 10% of the contracts she was able to steer to that company. And they would basically hold them in two accounts under the names of two of her relatives, which we've assumed to be her grandchildren. There's a reference to college funds. Those are the only two relatives of Bird Bennett that still will be going through college. And then on her retirement, she would be able to cash out. And in one email, the owner of that Soups Academy says, you'll be the richest woman on the planet for that day. So she pled guilty to that charge this week. And the other two, the companies and the two owners of the companies, appeared a day after she appeared to plead guilty. They entered not guilty pleas, but I assume that could potentially change as the process plays out. They clearly don't have a plea agreement yet, but Bird Bennett did have a plea agreement.
I mean, they are on email, and that is, to me, what right. is so striking about this. In this day and age, of course, we all know Chicago and Illinois' reputation for corruption, and wow, but how brazen.
Her email's right there in the bottom, sent from my iPad. I mean, she wasn't hiding any of this.
Right. And I just don't know how, for all that I have gathered, she was generally thought of as an intelligent person.
She was very well respected.
I mean, people now say they're really sad about this because they really liked her.
Right. And yet, how dumb do you have to be to do that over email?
Right.
I just don't even understand.
Well, right. And I would say, stemming from that, I mean, I think what people also don't understand, I cover schools, I cover education, and there has been a shift in education in the last decade or so where you have so many companies and basically people selling school districts things and promises, and we can fix this for you. And a lot of the people running those organizations are all entangled in districts or used to work in districts or going in and out of districts. And so,
and now making a profit on the side.
Right. And so I think that one of the reasons we saw her enter the guilty plea and these other guys enter not guilty pleas is I actually wonder if the feds are, and I think the bigger fish here is these companies and trying to.
Well, aren't they looking into Detroit schools now where she used to work with these same fellows?
And trying to uncover like how common they were doing this with district leaders. We know from the woman who broke the story over at Catalyst Chicago, Sarah Karp, when she wrote about this was 2 years ago, and the mayor and all these people were like, no, we stand by it, we stand by it. It wasn't until the feds got involved that they were like, we've never met these people.
That was this week. The mayor said he'd never met Gary Solomon.
Right, and so it is really interesting how this has played out, and I have to wonder, you know, I've talked with other people about this Supes Academy, and there was evidence of a superintendent out in Baltimore 2 years ago who kind of got a slap on the wrist for doing basically the same thing, working as a mentor, consultant, coach for Supes while also being the superintendent of a district that held a contract with Supes. So, I have to say, I think that there's a lot more to this that goes well beyond Burb Bennett and her brazen emails about lining her own, Zachary Farden said, lining her own pockets.
I think what you alluded to earlier, how there's been a shift over the years, I think the folks out in the private sector, the investors, the private equity guys, everybody out to make a quick buck, they look at this huge trove of money, the billions and billions of dollars in public education, and they want to get a piece of it. So they become consultants, they run charter schools, they try and privatize education, and it's all about making a buck. And there's this vast reservoir of dollars that are untouched by the private sector because it's all done by public employees. And I think that grates on them. They see this windfall and they try and get a piece of it, and they go beyond the pale in terms of cutting deals, kickbacks, bribes, and it's not good for the public morale in terms of the corruption, and it's not good for education either.
And would you see this reverberating to the Thompson Center if it still houses state government, but 200 miles south down to the Capitol?
So this is a big thing. A lot of people have said, as this news was breaking, you know, this is coming at a really bad time for CPS because CPS thinks they're going to get $500 million in bailout for their pension payment this year from Springfield. And I talked with lawmakers who just, you know, they want to hold out hope that maybe that will come through. But I'm not sure that that is, I mean, I don't know, downstate suburban, Amanda could probably speak to this more, but I don't think they're in the business of giving that much money to a school district that just got pinched for this kind of corruption.
I mean, it is interesting to talk to legislators about this. When the idea was first floated, you had downstate lawmakers literally laughing because, of course, the state doesn't have $500 million to toss around either. And so yet this is very much up for discussion. It is something that the governor has said he would be willing to do if he gets his way on his turnaround agenda. Then he's game for it. So you could expect perhaps some Republicans who wouldn't typically go for this sort of thing stick with Governor Bruce Rauner as they have thus far, and yet this makes it a whole lot tougher of a vote. And it's all meshed together.
Well, when you talk about the public money available to private sector companies, I mean, there could be strange interests that push people to vote a certain way that actually don't really think about kids.
Yeah.
You know, you have people that vote with lots of different interests that could still, for
get
some
put
reason,
money into campaigns,
put that on the table.
We're talking about something that is already in stone. Like, this is an expected thing that CPS wants. This isn't like we're talking about it. We hope it comes through.
The budget is banking.
The budget
on
is
it.
Banking yeah. on it, and I think that adds pressure to Springfield. But Springfield isn't feeling it. Is how I'm kind of interpreting
it. I was going to say, not to interrupt, but I think an important note to make here is that the pension systems for all the public school districts, 800 or so public school districts outside the city of Chicago, the employer contribution is paid for by the state to the teachers' retirement system. Mm-hmm. For District 299, the city of Chicago public schools, local taxpayers pay the pension contribution. And so that's a big point of, what would you say, contention. And as a matter of fact, there's been arguments over the years from Chicagoans that it would be fair if the state were to pick up some of the cost of the employer, you know, the Chicago Public Schools, for their teachers' retirement.
And that's why Rahm Emanuel characterizes this as Springfield owes it to Chicago to help out with this $500 million. However, there is some inaccuracy in that, which is that everybody pays into teacher pensions twice. Whether it's the same amount or not is up for debate. But, you know, you're paying when you pay your property tax, a little bit of that goes one place and a little bit goes the other. So,
and Chicago's getting more with its block grant from the state.
Right.
So,
those block grants,
part of it is because the state allocates extra money to school districts with high percentages of minority or low-income kids. And Chicago, for better or worse, has a large population of low-income kids. So that's designed to work the way it ought to. And interestingly, though, Mayor Emanuel talks about fairness. On the other side of the coin, House Speaker Michael Madigan over the years has suggested that maybe the state should stop funding the teachers' retirement system and have local school districts pick up that cost just as Chicago does, because that would save the state billions of dollars. Now, he doesn't want to do it in one fell swoop. He said that he would stretch it out over a number of years, and he would say the state has to be on the hook for the legacy payments, because the biggest chunk of money that we put into the retirement systems every year isn't to pay the cost of benefits earned in that year, but rather to pay the backlog in the unfunded liability because of money that was not put in the past and money not being there and therefore not earning interest in past years. And that's why we have such a huge unfunded liability for all of these systems.
Can I just add, separate from the pension discussion and CPS's ask, but to me this just raises the question, because although the governor clearly has plenty else to focus on in terms of the state budget, that he came in with an education agenda. That is where he's given a whole lot of money to, with his donations, charitable contributions. His wife is very vested in that and is still the director of a program for early childhood. And we've kind of been waiting. You know, he appointed a guy to head up the State Board of Education that is a advocate of charter schools, and he talked about potentially something akin to a voucher program. We haven't seen any movement in Springfield on any of these things, but I think I, for one, have been waiting for that to occur, for that shoe to drop, to use a turn of phrase.
So are you saying that it's possible? Am I reading you right that you're saying this might be the opportunity that some of those items might be able to mesh in with funding for Chicago?
Maybe. Who knows? I just am saying that to me it has been, you know, this governor came in and we knew that he had a business agenda to push. If you heard him during the primary, it was no surprise that there was any union legislation. Clearly that has been his focus, but we haven't seen any movement on education. Maybe this is it, or does this make it harder in terms of the Barbara Bird Bennett scandal for any of that to be pushed through, because critics of these programs can add fuel to that fire and say, hey, look what happened when we got private business involved, and there was all of the issues with UNO, and there have been all of these ethics scandals related to the kind of privatization side of education.
Bringing to another topic, you mentioned pensions, and Charlie Wheeler, the state has announced it doesn't quite have the money to pay its pension payment to all the pension systems. That doesn't mean the checks won't be coming to pension recipients. How significant is this announcement from the comptroller?
Well, it's just another, what would you say, piece of bad news on top of all the budget problems we have. But I think it's important to note, as you said, retirees will continue to get their checks, because there's a huge pile of money, billions and billions of dollars, that the systems have. And that's the pot from which the checks will be sent out to retirees on time regularly. There's never been a delay in making the payment. The problem is it's more of a cash flow problem. The state is required to put a certain amount of money I think it's like $6-7 billion into the retirement systems this fiscal year by law. And there's a schedule that's been worked out to pay so much a month. And what the comptroller is saying is that we're not going to have enough cash in the bank to make the payment that's coming due. And so it would be like me not being able to pay my city water, light, and power bill one particular month and having to wait for the next month's paycheck to be able to cover that bill.
So really, in the scheme of things, this is more just another little chip that sounds like it's a big problem.
Yeah,
it's adding to the woes that are out there.
Yeah, because the money will be paid. And the difficulty is, as the comptroller alluded to, we have all of these court orders, and they're all causing money to be paid out at last year's levels. And we're going to have approximately $5 billion less in revenue this year. And so we're paying all this stuff at last year's levels, and we're not going to have enough money to cover it by the end of the year. But the pension payments to the systems will be made because there's money coming in every day. There's hundreds of millions of dollars coming in every day to the state. And towards the spring, towards the end of the fiscal year, the daily collections improve because people file their income tax returns. There's a big jump in sales tax during the Christmas season. But the early fall months historically have been kind of the down point of the curve in terms of the state revenue collections.
I want to use the remaining time of the show to get in some notes from the field, and we'll start with Amanda Vinicky.
I've got two of them real quick. There was a hearing this week as Illinois seeks to follow the lead of California and perhaps adopt automatic voter registration. So when you renew or get a driver's license for the first time, automatically be registered to vote. That would add about 2.3 million voters more to Illinois' rolls. Also, Denny Hassert is expected to plead guilty later this month, October 28th, but there was some movement on that this week for those who have been following, and it is expected that that means we won't quite ever learn what exactly went on in terms of the misconduct that led to his paying out hush money, allegedly.
And Lauren Chulgen, who covers City Hall for Chicago, what do you have for us?
Well, two things. One fun, one not so fun. It's definitely going to be more expensive to live in Chicago if both the county and city budgets pass. Everything from golfing, cable TV, bowling was in Tony Preckwinkle's budget. And this, of course, comes on top of the penny on the dollar sales tax that went through earlier this year. And then there's, of course, the city budget with its property taxes, garbage collection fees, which some say may or may not get dropped, but we'll watch and see how that goes. But, you know, a number of taxes, fines, fees coming Chicagoans' way. On a fun note, I was out at O'Hare this week for the new runway, and the Jesse White Tumblers were there. And I always feel like that's worth mentioning because they're so impressive.
They really are.
And not only are they impressive with what they can do gymnastics-wise, but then they pack everything on the top of a van like it's nothing. It's amazing.
And Charlie Wheeler, we'll try to squeeze in a comment from you.
Okay, well, real quickly, and this is another sign of the state's fiscal distress, there was stories written towards the end of the week that more than 4,700 families have been denied subsidized child care under the new eligibility levels that the Rauner administration has put in at the beginning of this fiscal year. And the Department of Human Services has acknowledged that most of the applications are still pending. And if they're denying them at that rate, there'll probably be in excess of 10,000 families that will be without subsidized daycare, some of whom will wind up on the welfare rolls.
That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Becky Vivi and Lauren Chulgen of WBEZ in Chicago. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.